Mad Radio, John McClain is in, brought to you by Horn Solutions. Get your questions ready for Ask McClain anything at the top of the hour, 713-572-4610. John, the ride-in this morning was okay for you?
It was. I live at I-10 in Voss. I came straight down Voss to Westheimer and then took that, tried to stay on the busy streets, and I was amazed.
That makes sense.
Saw a lot of ice, saw a lot of morons driving fast, and I don't wish anybody a wreck, but I'm thinking, why, with all the warnings, would you be driving 60 on Westheimer? A lot of them were trucks.
Not good.
Yeah, so they got a lot of traction.
I mean, I'm someone who's driven in cold temperatures pretty decently, a pretty decent amount of my life. Ice is a very scary thing.
Well, ice especially. Like, if you're on the scariest thing about the bridges being ice is when you realize, like, I might be going a little too fast and I'm going downhill now.
Yes.
Like, the downhill side's the part that's really scary, and there's a curve at the bottom of the hill. But then it's just growing up out in the country, like driving a stick shift, that was the most terrifying thing. Because you find yourself all of a sudden like on a steep downhill with a stop sign at the bottom.
Ooh.
And you're just not stopping.
Yeah.
Or when you're trying to get going in a stick shift going up a hill and everything. Just dicey stuff all the time.
One time when I was in high school, I took this girl to a movie. And we'd been told it was going to be ice. It came out, every street was iced over and people couldn't go anywhere. So I had plenty of gas. And I tried to make out with her in the movie, and she wouldn't do it.
Yeah.
So we go to the car, can't do anything. So I turn on the car, and she gets bored. She made out with me.
Out of boredom?
So that's what you got to do, just bore them out.
Bored.
Make them bored. Pass the night, I put the music on the only station in town, and got to make out with her because of an ice storm.
That became your go-to move, bore them. We'll watch bad movies and listen to Lawrence Welk on the radio. Yeah.
John, what do you want to hear from Brian Gain today?
Well, I talked to him at length the other day, and I wrote everything he said over 2 days, and Brian's a really good talker. I never talked to him other than just see him in the press box or in the hallway, and he was always very cordial, but he was loyal to Rick Smith. And he said, I don't do interviews. He said, I don't divulge anything off the record, and I admired that about him. And so, I talked to him about his reports and his relationship with O'Brien, about having final say. And so I was more interested when I did a column yesterday on Bill O'Brien Bill Parcells, talking about Brian Gain and how he'd been with him three places and how he had everything you need to be a good general manager, but you never knew about anybody till they were in the decision-making process. You don't know about anyone because none of them have had final say till they get it for the first time. And he's talking about the importance of the relationship between a coach and GM. A coach has to be able to talk honestly to the general manager. They have to vent. They have to argue, but they can't let it get personal. And he was very high on Gain, as I knew he would be since he'd hired him so many places. So the bottom line is, I see people, I don't like Brian Gain. They can't really give a reason. And the fact is, there's no way you know about anybody till you give them a chance. It's probably going to be 3 years before we have an idea.
And I guess the question would be, you know some things about Brian Gain, and obviously the Texans won't really know how he does as a GM. But what was it that made them so eager to sign him now instead of, say, perhaps waiting until the guy from Philadelphia, the guy from New England became available for interview?
I don't think O'Brien would sign an extension until he knew who the general manager was going to be. They can't hire good coaches if O'Brien's in the last year of his contract, because who's going to come with a coach could be fired in a year. And McNair had told me that they'd like to have had everything in place by the time they went to the Senior Bowl, which they leave. I'm guessing this weekend. The Texans staff's coaching one of the teams. But I think the fact that they knew him, liked him, and respected him, they'd seen him on four drafts, four free agent periods, they knew enough to like him, but then they wanted to interview him because this time he could be honest about everything because he wasn't Rick Smith's right-hand man answering to him. He could give his opinions about everything. So he should have killed the interview. He knew them. They knew him. And so once he came in and talked to him, McNair was sold on him.
Are we curious about what Brian Gain, what he thought of the Texans free agent class in 2016 that hasn't really turned out all that well? Osweiler, Jeff Allen specifically.
Well, we're not ever going to know. I mean, you don't know exactly. Now, Bill O'Brien knows what Gain thought about him. Bob McNair knows. Cal McNair knows. but I have no clue what he said. He may have said, I love Osweiler. He may have recommended against it. You know, he may have said, I love Deshaun Watson. I don't love Deshaun Watson. We don't know exactly what he thought, but they did. And I'm guessing if he had a positive opinion about a lot of players that bombed out, he would not be in this role.
Sean O'Hara is the offensive assistant who's worked with the backup quarterbacks. He's the guy that's been an extra in various movies. He's interviewing for the
–
what's that?
Pat O'Hara.
What did I call him?
Sean
O'Hara, the offensive lineman. Yeah, he's a completely different dude altogether. So Pat
O'Hara, he's got a beard.
He's interviewing for the quarterback's job with Chicago. I was just curious. Do you know – did he take a bigger role in – coaching the offense this year now that when Bill O'Brien was the offensive coordinator just because there are fewer offensive coaches?
He has always worked primarily with the backup quarterbacks. And in the organization, Pat was highly thought of. But they had Sean Ryan, who looks like he'll be back here next year. Bill, of course, is not going anywhere. So Pat, I'm sure, being the third guy, if he had a chance to be the quarterback coach for Matt Nagy, and he would jump at it. He interviewed yesterday, and it would be a great opportunity for him to get to go up there and coach Trubisky. Now, I'm guessing Nagy is going to coach Trubisky, and is Glennon still there?
I mean, he's still under contract. I'm guessing they'll probably find a way to part ways this offseason.
Will they be able to, or is that a deal? We'll have to look that up on Spotrac.
The thing about a quarterback coach, like Bill O'Brien coaches Watson during the week, but as you see on games, he's on the sideline. And then when Watson would come off for any quarterback, they go over to the bench and they talk to Sean Ryan.
Yes.
So Pat O'Hara would be coaching Trubisky a lot, even though Nagy would call plays. And Nagy would coach him a lot during the week. But when they get to games like that, he'd be the one with what do they use? It's not iPads. Surface Pros.
Microsoft Surface.
Yeah, Surfaces. So he gets a lot of interaction and a chance to really help quarterbacks. So it'd be a great position for O'Hara.
By the way, Glennon, his cap hit for next season, $16 million. Dead cap number is 4.5. So they'll cut him and save a lot of money. Why?
Yeah. They'll save $12 million if they cut him?
$12,
okay,
yeah,
I thought you meant
why.
There would be a $4 million cap hit. Okay, so that was a one-year deal, basically, they gave him.
Basically, they gave him
an absurd amount of money to come in. And
much easier than the Osweiler deal to swallow.
If I'm Pat O'Hara, I would claim that I want $10 million to come and be there because they're morons about how much they pay for quarterbacks. And maybe that filters over to
Osweiler
quarterbacks.
Osweiler was only 31.
Coaches.
Well, 37. Well, it turned out to be 31. Yeah. It would have been 37. It turned out to be 31 with the trade. Glennon was probably 18 or 17, something like that. Anyway, so to recap, the Texans expect Sean Ryan to be back as quarterback's coach. Pat O'Hara could leave, and they're interviewing, or they interviewed Packers safeties coach Darren Perry.
And they interviewed Anthony Midget, who's been the backup DB coach here for 4 years. It wouldn't surprise me if he doesn't get it. And then Mike Vrabel's interviewing today with the Titans. And the thing everybody wants to know from Mike, what would you do with your offense? Like with his interviewing today, who would be your coordinator? Who would be your quarterback coach? What system would you run? Tell us why you can make Marcus Mariota be a better quarterback than he was this year. And that's he's had enough experience with that because he had to talk to Detroit about Stafford. He had to talk about the Colts about Andrew Luck, and they're hiring Matt Patricia and Josh McDaniels. So that's really important for him to be able to explain in a way that impresses them.
I know exactly what he's going to do. They're going to say, Mike, you're a defensive-minded guy. What are we going to do about this offense? And he's going to look at him, and he's going to say four words. New England? Because you got to throw in the New England there just so they remember like you're from New England. George Godsey. That's going to be the plan. I'm going to wow you and dazzle you with George Godsey, and then blame everything on Rick Smith.
Mike, we'll see you later. Thank you very much. Thank you for your time and consideration.
I honestly, if I were Mike Vrabel, I think you just got to go ahead and trump up. These owners are such jock sniffers for anything Patriots. So you just got to go ahead. And even though none of it's borne out by statistics or anything, just go ahead and just talk about how everything you learned in New England is going to make Tennessee like New England South.
John, who is the biggest star in the NFC Championship game?
So we're looking at Carson Wentz isn't there.
That is a great question. You know, you look at the skill positions, There's not a running back. You look at a wide receiver, and boy, that is a great question. It is a tough question. You're talking about two great defenses. I would guess off the top of my head, Fletcher Cox, the perennial Pro Bowl defensive tackle for the Eagles, mm-hmm. is great.
Okay.
It's hard to say. Fletcher Cox is like a, like almost any non-J.J. Watt defensive lineman isn't really a household name, no matter how good he is.
I guess I would change that, excuse me, to like since Stephon Diggs made that great play, and there's going to be so much him that maybe Stephon Diggs.
I think as far as nationwide, and the name I've seen mentioned the most in the synopsis of all of that so far this week has been Case Keenum. I think Case Keenum might be the biggest star right this moment.
Maybe.
In terms of like if you asked NFL fans like who's the first guy you think of in that game, they've heard Case Keenum's name a whole bunch in this last week.
It's kind of a unique question. Obviously it would have been once.
It was a great question. Speaking of Case Keenum, I'm doing a big thing on him for Sunday about talking to coaches who have coached him along the way. I've talked to Cliff Kingsbury from U of H, Gary Kubiak from the Texans, Bill O'Brien from the Texans, and Jeff Fisher from the Rams, and all of them. I ask him, why is he where he is this season? What made him, allowed him to make that play? And they were all great. So I'm going to have a huge story on Sunday about that.
Well, that'll be fun. And I encourage everybody to buy the paper on Sunday. There's nothing better than get up an hour before your family, buy the paper.
Get some coffee.
In a coffee shop or something.
That's
and,
a great Sunday
and just,
morning.
And sit there and read the paper.
I love Sundays now because I don't have to cover a game. So we take the Sunday New York Times and I get up and read all the Chronicle and all the New York Times on Sunday mornings.
The whole damn thing?
Almost, except for the comics or whatever. Yes, I read travel, I read entertainment, business, national, everything.
John, are you like me? When I grew up, I read the comics every day, and yet I never felt like the comics made me laugh. The comics, like, were the funnies all that funny growing up?
I never thought the funnies were funny.
Yeah, I don't quite get it sometimes. Like, the newspaper funnies, I don't, other than the Far Side's the only one that would consistently make me laugh out loud.
That makes sense.
Loud. Like, I'd get a guffaw every now and then.
A lot of them were designed, to make you think.
Yeah, or to, like, follow a story along, right?
Yeah, or like, Tank McNamara, which was created and done by our columnist Jeff Miller at the Chronicle, and you know you followed it. Sometime it would be multiple things, not each standalone.
Yeah,
and he did a lot of things based on what was going on in sports, made mm-hmm. it pertinent.
Oh, Dilbert was funny though too. Dilbert made me laugh out loud. Far Side made me laugh out loud. The one I despised was The Family Circle. I hated that whole family. I hated every single damn one of them. But you had to watch because they grew up. Like, you'd actually watch, like, the kids would get older. It's like when you're watching a singer. They weren't frozen in time like some of these other ones. Calvin and Hobbes. I liked Calvin and Hobbes,
okay.
too. I guess I like some of the edgier ones, and I despised The Family Circle with all its wholesome goodness.
Cabin Fever asked, John, does Rick Smith's position on the competition committee stay with the Texans, or will a new member be appointed, and if so, by whom?
It'll be a new member will be appointed, and I'm not sure if that's Roger Goodell, his office. Actually, I think it's by Roger, because when they get off of it, they let Roger know. Like when Jeff Fisher was out for a year after the Titans, he was kind of de facto member. Then when he went to the Rams, he got back on it. And Rick Smith, because he is spending time taking care of his wife and his kids, he would not have time for the competition committee. And he said he told Roger. So Goodell makes that decision.
John, is Brian Cushing going to be on this team 6 months from now?
I don't think so. I think Brian, because of Zach Cunningham and Dylan Cole, I think Brian will be cut. And because he played outside linebacker out of necessity, he's not an outside linebacker. He's been a starter his entire career. I wouldn't see him coming back. And Cunningham, instead of hitting that rookie wall, he got better as the season went on.
John, which fan base on Sunday deserves to win the most?
Philadelphia has been to two Super Bowls. And
two Super Bowls. They haven't won since 1961.
Is it 60 or 61?
Yeah, 60-61.
Norm Van Brocklin was their quarterback. And so Minnesota has been to four Super Bowls. Minnesota has had some of the toughest luck with kickers on their way to the Super Bowl. And so I'm going to say Philadelphia's because they've been to two and Minnesota's been to four.
John, you're big into Hollywood. Which one of these two stars is less likely to be involved in a sexual misconduct allegation? Ron Howard or Tom Hanks?
Oh, God.
You're not saying that either of them will be. Yeah. Which one do you feel safe is like, all right, he's not going down in something like this?
Tom, I don't know what Ron Howard's marital status is.
I think he's pretty happily married.
Is he? And then so Tom Hanks has been happily married to Rita Wilson forever.
Yeah.
And just...
But they both seem like such good guys. You know, like, you're like, they're the guy that you want to be your uncle or something. You know, like, I could see that these two in particular were the first ones that jumped to my mind where if I hear one of these guys goes down, I'll be really, like, personally shocked and upset.
Heartbroken.
Yeah. One of the things that amazes me about people accused, all of them are ugly.
James Franco?
I forgot about him. Yeah. But most of them, I was look back when it started, Weinstein, James.
I have to be honest.
James Toback, the directors, now had 350-something women coming forward.
Mike, don't you dare say you didn't realize Harvey Weinstein wasn't an attractive man.
Oh, no, no. Yeah, okay. I'm just not sure how to react, to be honest with you.
You're like, what woman wouldn't want to be with Harvey Weinstein? You get the sense with like some of the power hungry dudes that you almost feel like this was like the very reason they were driven to have success. They had some sick notion that they were going to be able to do whatever they wanted, like on the casting couch.
Maybe.
Or whatever. Yeah.
John, what is the coldest football game you've ever been at?
Let's see. I was when Cincinnati played at home against San Diego in the playoffs, I was not at that game. And it was the coldest. Everybody talks about the ice bowl. It was colder in Cincinnati, and wind chill was like in the 30s or 40s. By the way, I read a story on the internet last night about a place 3,300 miles from Moscow in which it hit minus 88 degrees, and kids go to school when it's minus 40, and they were all excited because it was minus 88, and they didn't have to go to school.
Oh, and kids have gotten soft. In the Soviet Union, they would have had to go.
I want to know what that feels like, maybe for a split second.
They were going outside and having pictures showing their eyebrows would freeze and they were icicles stuff. I was in a game that it was below zero in Chicago and wind chill was like minus 15 because the wind was just blowing like crazy. I've been places where it's like zero to one or two and there's no wind, so it's no problem. But that game between the 49ers and the Bears, I was just miserable, and they built an auxiliary press box on top of the regular press box, and they had AFC media up there, and they had a porta toilet, and female woman went to the porta toilet, sat on it, got up, and skin from her butt stayed on it. She came back, she was miserable, and there wasn't anything could be done for her during that period, and so. And that was the worst I've ever felt.
How'd you know it was her skin? You go in and it was like, I know that skin anywhere. That's Susie.
Oh, my goodness.
How
you never
skin?
Know what you're going to get Wednesday
like
at
all
8 o'clock.
The skin? How did she? What the hell? Just
that's
not
crazy.
Just a little bit of skin
of her
or something.
Butt stuck on the seat because it was so cold.
Unbelievable.
She was in agony the rest of the game, as you can imagine.
Every Wednesday, 8 o'clock, ask McClain anything.
It's all long and straight and hard, Mike. It's
Matt
all.
Radio. John McClain, brought to you by Horn Solutions. AJ Boye.
Yeah.
AJ Boye is my solution.
I was just sorry, that was on air, by the way. We're talking about the drive to New Orleans.
I
wouldn't worry about this ice. The only time the ice is an issue is when you're trying to steer well on the ice. That's where you get into a lot of trouble. So I got nervous this morning when I was driving slowly over a couple of these bridges.
Yes.
And somebody next to me was like changing lanes on the ice. Like,
not ideal.
No, don't. Change lanes. You keep going straight and slow.
You try to stay in a lane where other cars have gone.
Yeah.
You'll get a lot of bridges going into New Orleans. Of course, it's flat, but it's going to be up. Hopefully, what time are you leaving?
We're thinking about 11, but we could push it back.
You should. You know what you should do is take an airboat. That's what you should do.
I don't know what that is.
Those swamp boats that they have with the fan on the back.
So once I get down there, I can take the airboat.
As soon as you come to the first bridge that's closed, rent an airboat.
Rent an airboat.
To New Orleans.
That's the problem.
You can be careful as can be.
I know.
But then you have these morons out there who are not.
Yeah.
Well, we'll see what happens.
Just like with sex. Yep.
That's the problem.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Like, you can be careful as you want to be, but like, oh, I'm on the pill, I swear.
And then, I was driving in the rain from New Orleans coming down I-10 to cut up to Dallas after when the Texans couldn't make it home, I was amazed at how many people were saying, do not come to Houston, and have all these people were headed to Houston driving like maniacs. I don't think they got through. Yeah, Brian Smith from the Chronicle tried to get through, and he had to spend a couple of days somewhere else because he couldn't get into town.
Yeah.
I don't know if you guys noticed this.
Is Brian married?
He just got married.
He is? Oh, okay.
Good for him. I got to get to that level.
Nice. If I were a young single guy driving from New Orleans, I got stuck in one of those little hamlets somewhere off the road.
Get on Tinder?
Get myself a relation somewhere between here and New Orleans.
Yeah, why not?
Some woman from some small little, she works for her daddy, hunting alligators or something like that. I'd like to have that in my life if I were a young single guy.
I don't know if you guys noticed this specifically in the Titans-Patriots game, but Gronk was basically unstoppable in the game. I mean, put it this way. If you're Tennessee, think about how depressing this would be if
you
were a Tennessee
fan.
Mean
Gronkowski?
Yes,
okay,
Gronkowski.
Just in case nobody knew.
In case they didn't know. Yeah. Rob Gronkowski was targeted 9 times, 6 catches, 81 yards, and a touchdown. Dick LeBeau put his best defensive back on him, basically, Kevin Byard. I mean, I don't know what else you can do. You can put Logan Ryan. That didn't work. Kevin Byard was, I think he might have been all-pro this season.
He was first-team all-pro,
former
third-round pick.
8 interceptions, third-round pick out of Middle Tennessee State. They put Byard on Gronk on different occasions, and Brady was 4-for-4 in targeting that matchup. If I'm Jacksonville on Sunday, what I would do is I would look at the tape of the Texans and Chiefs from a year and a half ago, number 2, when the Texans, before A.J. Boye became A.J. Boye, and they put him on Travis Kelce for most of that game. I know he's a tight end, Gronk is, so, I mean, it may not be reasonable on every single play. I would have A.J. Boye defending Rob Gronkowski as often as possible.
As often as possible, and this is the thing. Byard isn't a long guy. He's not a tall guy. He's only like 5'10 or 5'11. And it almost doesn't matter how good a cornerback you are as much as do you have length? And that's why Brandon Browner, when he was with the Seahawks, was effective versus Rob Gronkowski. Not because Brandon Browner was some incredible cornerback, but he had length. He had a lot. Browner was like 6'3".
Yep.
And to the point where Belichick ended up signing Browner, he did such a good job. That's the kind of guy you want. Boye is interesting because, John, you know, he's only about 6 foot tall. But when I watch him play, it looks like he's 6'2". He uses his arms and uses whatever length he has really effectively and ends up gives the effect of playing with a lot more length than he actually has. So that might be just the ticket.
The ticket to me is you double team him on every single play and make somebody else beat you.
But the problem is when you do that, you create voids elsewhere. And that's why, like,
create them.
Teams that do that get eviscerated elsewhere. Like, they have other guys. Amendola ends up getting 8 catches. Like, doubling him every single play is like you're taking resources away from other viable threats.
If you're going to let Danny Amendola beat one of your good DBs and the best secondary in the league.
Oh, that's right. All he has is Tom Brady throwing to him. I forgot. All right. Yeah. Just don't worry about Tom Brady. He can't do anything without Gronkowski.
I have a question about double teaming and just schematically. A lot of times when people think about double teaming, it's like, well, you put literally 2 guys on one, hence the name double team. But one thing the Jets did in week 17 was, you know, basically they had a linebacker carry him to a certain point. Then they had Jamal Adams.
Yeah.
It didn't work out. It worked out actually decently for the Jets for a while in that game. So you could do something like that. The other thing I wanted to mix in with this, my idea about, I mean, it's not like a revolutionary idea. I think Prisco had the same idea for CBSSports.com. The fact that Gronk is so physical and Boye is so physical, I think works in the favor of the Jaguars in that matchup. In that, I think that the officials are not going to call defensive pass interference much on Boye, which sometimes he gets into a habit of doing. I think against a guy like Gronk, I think that putting a more physical guy on him will actually benefit them from a officiating physicality standpoint.
They end up being more. They give Gronk a harder time than Boye.
Yeah, like defending
Boye
Shaq.
Is not going to get called as much. Yeah.
And
that's
when I say
thought.
Double, I'm talking about because Gronk works the middle of the field. You have Boye on top of him. You have a safety deep. And if he gets away from Boye down the middle, the safety closes on him.
Yeah, I don't know.
And if he runs a short
it's valid.
Route,
they're valid.
Then the corner stays with him, and the safety's free to do somebody else.
No, and it's all valid, but it always comes down to do you have the guys to do it. Like, there is no blueprint for limiting Gronkowski. If there was, then everybody would be able to do it all the time. The problem is that you've got to be able to limit Gronkowski while still take care of everything else elsewhere. People will say, well, you got to rough him up on the line of scrimmage. That's great, but that takes away from your pass rush too and gives Tom Brady even more time. And it just, there's always a give and a take, and when do you do it? I think if anything, it's not whether or not you double him or bracket him or rough him up. It's when do you choose to do it, and can you disguise it to where they don't know it's coming? Because that's when it'll screw Brady.
They get pressure with their front four without blitzing. You know, I'm sure they will. But if you go back to the Texans' loss last year, they were within one score in the fourth quarter. And afterward, NFL Films picked up Brady telling Kraft about how tough that defense was for him. So I'm sure, because the Jaguars' defense is better than that Texans' defense because they get better pressure on a quarterback. So I can't wait to see if the Patriots can handle their front four like nobody's really been able to handle
their
front
four. It's that pressure up the middle that really does it. And the cool thing that Jaguars have, I was skeptical of this, was that they were going to use Calais Campbell as an edge rusher. Because he's most of his career been a guy that's effective on the inside. He's done some really good work from the edge, but he can also go down inside. So for this matchup specifically, they're constructed really well. The Jaguars are, for to have a chance. It all really honestly comes down to, are you going to get the Blake Bortles from Pittsburgh, or are you going to get the Blake Bortles from Buffalo?
Yeah, my two quick thoughts on the game on Sunday, the AFC Championship game, is from a Jaguar standpoint, I'll be rooting hard for Jacksonville, as I imagine most people will, because of the anti-New England factor. I think the combination of their pass rushers, Yannick Ngakoue and Fowler off the edge, they have to be really good on Sunday. And then what you mentioned, Bortles. Like those two things. Because I'm confident in Jacksonville showing up in the other places. The running game, the other players on defense. It's about Fowler and Ngakoue doing what some teams like the Giants have been able to do. And then obviously Bortles needs to play well enough and make some big plays off play action. He needs to put together a few drives here in big spots like Sanchez was able to do and Flacco hasn't been able to do at Gillette Stadium.
I saw two great stats yesterday. When Marcell Dareus is in the game, how much better they are against the run, and then where Buffalo is one of the best defenses in the league against the run, then after they trade him, they became one of the worst. And so Doug Marrone, of course, has gotten the maximum out of Dareus, who was, what, third overall pick with the Bills?
Yep.
And so the thing that's fascinating about the Patriots, we all know they take away, they're great at taking away one guy that you're best, and I'm guessing it's Fournette.
Yeah.
They're going to have a plan to limit him.
And that's where it's interesting, though, too, because in taking away Fournette, are you playing into what makes Bortles good, which is the play action? If you're committing that safety up and you're committing some opportunities for perhaps safeties and linebackers to bite on the play action because they're so focused on stopping the run, that might actually work out to the Jaguars' benefit. And I do think that Tom Coughlin might understand the psychology of Bill Belichick better than anybody else in America, and going back to their days together with the Giants in the 90s. And part of that is, in whatever he contributes to game planning, I think he's going to know exactly what the pitfalls are and kind of anticipate also what Belichick's game plan is going to be to take Fournette out of the game.